Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game. And maybe one day we might have the Chris Johnston Show come from a Coburg-based venue near our Coburg-based listeners. Maybe. I saw the Coburg Cougars tweet at us saying, hey, when are we coming down for a game? When are we coming to hang out?
Well, I'll tell you, it went deeper than a tweet. Like, I got some digits for Josh from the Cougars. We had a call.
Okay.
So things are happening. You know, I've passed them on to the big boss man, Adam Wild. But let it be said here out loud. We're putting this into the universe because the Cougars put it in the universe first. So we're doing some kind of meetup there, hopefully in the near future. You know, I actually went to Cougars games as a kid. Monday night used to be their big night for home games. And I'd go out often with my friends or stay late if I had a hockey game earlier before they played in the rink. And I'm jazzed by the prospect of it. We just got to get Steve Dangle there. I've heard that he's a little bit of a shut-in in Oshawa. And given that he's literally physically the closest of us to Coburg right now, like I live in downtown Toronto and Jesse lives in downtown Toronto. Adam lives close to downtown Toronto. Like we're all an hour, $1.15. You know, you're 4 hours from Coburg.
Like, and that's Montreal. A drive. And I'm down. I'm coming.
Steve is half an hour door to door, 35 minutes tops. Almost no, like literally I've done this drive hundreds of times in my life. There's like never traffic. Like he doesn't even have to worry. He can have the most stress-free day. If he's got to be there at 7, he's leaving at 6:15 and he's on time. And so Steve Dangle, you got to get your butt to Coburg. That's all I'm saying.
Get your butt to Coburg. Also, I think at the end of one of the last SDPs of last week, he made mention of the Coburg thing. And I think he like said, like, Julian's got to be there. Like, I got to be there. If you're going to call me out and say, I got to be there, you cannot be that guy who's all like, oh, well, you know, I just want to sit in my home and not go.
He asked, what's the closest Via station? Like, there's a Via station in Coburg. Like, I'm not
kidding.
That's
disrespectful.
Of course, we would pick you up, Julian. But if we didn't, it's like 0.4 kilometers, I don't know, from the rink, maybe a little longer. But like, there's a Via station within a kilometer-ish of the arena the Cougars play in. So like, anyway, but Steve didn't even know that. That's my point. He doesn't, for a guy who doesn't live downtown Toronto, he's got to know a little bit more about the suburbs, you know?
So disrespectful of your hometown. What is this?
Hey, I'm just Drake over here protecting, you know?
Ooh, six got it. Well, we'll see. Is the area code 416 still in Coburg? What's the area code in Coburg?
905 is one of them. And then there's another one. I don't even know. That's an embarrassing one. Do you know anyone's phone number anymore? I actually had this thought today. I know like three phone numbers off by heart and that's about it. So
I know my house number. Well, like for my parents, I guess I know my own phone number. I used to know my grandma's old house number and then she moved out. I think I know one of my sister's phone numbers. I think that's it. Yeah. Right. I don't need to remember phone numbers anymore.
That's what you don't need to remember anything. I don't remember emails, nothing. I mean, it's just a waste of space up top. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I know my own, of course, my dad's cell phone now was our childhood phone number. So like, I remember that, but you know, I don't have very many numbers that I'm even trying to memorize. And so I can't answer that question, but yeah, 905 is one of them. There's a new area code. I just can't remember what it is.
At least your dad has a cell phone. Mine does not.
Wow. Do you know?
Yes.
This is a true story that's going to make me seem like 102 years old. When I was a kid, you only had to dial five numbers to get your friends.
What?
Yeah. So like, you know, the last four numbers of any phone number would be unique, of course.
Of course. And then
our local, like not even the area code, but the local town number was 372. But because there was only 372 when I was a kid, you just had to dial two and then the four unique numbers of whichever friend you wanted to call.
When did this all change? This sounds like something you hear about in like 1950s, 1960s, like olden days.
That changed in the early 90s, I would say.
So so around the time when I was either just in the womb or like before I popped out.
But still, like it actually blew my mind because as a kid, it's the opposite of now. I had to memorize everybody's phone number, but I only had to remember like 6 was my buddy Sean LaFontaine. And I hope I haven't just doxed him. Hope he doesn't still have that number. But but you know what I mean? Like I didn't know how to like add the other numbers on because I was a kid. Anyway, we've really started on a not hockey angle here. So let's save this. Get us out of the ditch here.
Okay, two things. One, producer Jesse, please just bleep out whatever number CJ said. Two, don't even worry about the fact we didn't even start about talking about hockey because they do this on Steve Dangle podcast all the time where they just talk about some random nonsense before they head into it. And then they have the nerve to say that our show is, you know what, I've complained enough already. Let's just get to the episode topic for today. Not that many. In fact, what we actually wanted to do for this Monday edition, since we normally do ask CJ anyway, we're going to mainly spend most of the time fielding in some questions. So you might notice there might be a few more questions that we answer on this episode, a little bit more than normal. I do want to just kind of...
Let's call this what it is. Fan show. The people are lifting us up today. I got a bit of a case of the Mondays. Like nothing too bad, but just sort of, you know, not feeling it. You were asking for topics yesterday. I just wasn't feeling it. It's not a comment on the show or anything. It's just, you know, sometimes you need the people to lift you up. And when we throw out the Ask CJ hashtags, we're getting tons of response. I can only get 7 or 8 at a time in my Toronto Star Inside the NHL column. And so there's tons on there. I know Discord's fueling us up. So the people are lifting us up today. Thank you very much.
Why the hell do I need to talk about the Islanders and the fact that they're playing in their own home arena or Seth Jarvis? Let's just go straight to these questions then.
Love it. Get at it. What do the fans want to know? Weird, okay. Quirky, serious, whatever you want.
All right. So let's start from this first one. I actually know this guy is a good homie of mine, Marco D'Amico. He's at The Hockey Expert on Twitter. You have mentioned that your feeling is that Montreal will move on from Marc Bergevin. Have you heard anything on the subject of a potential replacement or any changes from the organization? You said you wanted these questions. Let's just get at it now. Let's get to what the people want to know, CJ.
Well, and I don't say this like glibly or anything. You know, Marc Bergevin being in COVID protocol, I don't think anything's going to happen while that's going on. And you know, I read some of his comments that, you know, I hope he's doing well and that, you know, his health is in a good spot there. It sounded like he turned a corner after a tough couple of days, which is actually what I've heard from a few people I know anecdotally that have dealt with COVID or are double vaccinated, that essentially you have a day or two that it's rough and then you come through it and you're happy you're vaccinated. So good for everyone who got vaccinated. But yes, okay. So I think it would be, for me, it would be a surprise at this point if he finishes out the season, just the way the season's gone. You know, I don't get any sense at all that Marc Bergevin and the Montreal Canadiens are in any degree of dialogue on a contract. You know, they obviously took a couple stabs at this, you know, even going back to last summer and weren't able to find a deal. And so, you know, I know it's hardly a surprise to say it's just a matter of when. And, you know, with all the losing the team's done, I think that probably makes some sense to maybe do it sooner than later. And so we'll see how his COVID situation goes. You know, what I have heard is that the organization seems pretty focused on a Francophone candidate to replace him. You know, again, not a huge shock, but every time you face, you know, it's been almost 10 years, right, since they've had this kind of decision for that seat, you know, maybe you want to view it differently. And so the Francophone candidates, frankly, aren't that plentiful, you know, with Julien Brisebois locked up. The obvious candidates. I'm not saying there aren't lots of Francophones in a sport of hockey. It's just, it can be a big leap into the GM's chair of the Montreal Canadiens if you haven't had significant front office experience prior to getting there. And so, you know, I think Matthew Darche is someone that makes some sense. You know, I know there's lots of talk in the media about guys like Patrick Waugh or, you know, other sort of legends of the organization. You know, in Patrick's case, he did coach for a few years with Colorado and he's, you know, he's run the junior team in Quebec City for a long time. But I'd be surprised if that's the kind of way they go. And so, you know, I look at someone like a Matthew Darche as, you know, a likely successor or a possible successor. I don't want to call it likely. You know, it's not that I know for sure he's going to get the job, but I think that he rates pretty highly for them. And so, yeah, I mean, that's kind of where we're going right now is, you know, I do think it's more than likely there's a change made. It's going to be a Francophone. You know, maybe not initially. I don't know if they do an intern type of GM as we've seen in Anaheim and Chicago. But you know, I would say the next permanent GM of the Canadiens after Marc Bergevin will be Francophone.
What about Martin Mattin Jr. in Anaheim? And that admittedly was not a name I had thought about until, you know, until like fairly recently, just mentioning it to friends and other media colleagues. He's a guy who's from Quebec City, has been in the Anaheim organization for a little while now. I think was like a scout at one point as well. Like, why hasn't his name been brought up compared to Mathieu Darche, who his name gets thrown out a lot? Patrick Roy, even his name getting mentioned. How come no Martin Madden mentioned?
I actually hear a lot of buzz about Madden. You know, maybe it's just people talking in the circles I'm talking. Like, I'm not saying that's on social media or in the media, but, you know, I do think he would be someone that they would look at. You know, I think with Mathieu Darche, like, let's call it as it is. He's been Julien Brisebois' right-hand man the last 2 years. He's won 2 Stanley Cups as a result. You know, really well-known person in the marketplace. You know, really well-respected person. And he's learning at the hands or beside, you know, probably the best GM in the league or one of the best GMs in the league, you know, depending on how you rate these things. And so I think that you know, that qualifies him in the sense that, like, he's seeing how the best organization in the league is running. And you know, why wouldn't you, again, when you're dealing with the relatively limited pool of people with that kind of level of experience, you know, I think that's why you're hearing a lot about Mathieu Darche. You know, as for Madden, I don't know him personally. I've read a little bit about his past and sort of have some idea of his way through pro hockey, but I will say there are people in his corner. Like, I've had actually a couple people reach out to me independent of me asking around, sort of putting his name on the radar, saying you should look at this guy, you know? And so, you know, I do think he's someone that would get a look. Cause again, there's just not a lot of Francophones working in other organizations, that have at least got close enough to the GM seat that you could say, all right, he's ready to take that leap, which is, you know, where Marc Bergevin was, right? He was with the Blackhawks, during their early cup year in 2010 and working in their front office before he made the jump. And, you know, I know there's been a lot of ups and downs and this year certainly hasn't gone well in Montreal, but, you know, I think it's been a relatively successful tenure for him. I just sort of feel like it's maybe exhausted. It's, you know, it's hard to keep reinventing yourself forever. I think maybe there's a new set of eyes needed for that organization.
Last thing I'll mention with regards to hockey in Quebec, did you hear anything about our Quebec Premier François Legault basically putting together a committee of some of the, I guess, brighter minds when it comes to hockey in our province in order to try to figure out a way why there aren't more Quebecois players who are playing in hockey? Now that you keep reiterating the fact that there aren't that many candidates from a front office perspective, I wonder if they should even consider the idea that, hey, maybe they should find ways to get more of those people in the front office level. Because you're right, the pool for prospective GM candidates for the Canadiens, for example, not going to be as plentiful as opposed to if they widened up their search.
Yeah, you know, I saw the Premier's, you know, comments on that. And I can't say I like the idea. You know, it's not a Quebec issue. Like, frankly, I think this is a bit of a Canada issue when you just look at, you know, getting, you know, onboarding people into the sport. There's obviously a lot of financial challenges with it. Mm-hmm. Ice doesn't appear naturally everywhere anymore. So it's got to be refrigerated in a closed building. And there's a lot of costs associated with that. And let's face it, there's other things to do. You know, things change and grow and over time. And so, you know, I think that it's something I know Hockey Canada has been focused on at its level, you know, participation rates, trying to introduce people to the sport that maybe don't have the means to do it in their families. But, you know, the idea you're trying to capture all the best athletes you can and get them in this sport. You know, I like it. I do think we're getting closer and closer to an election there. So I see he's also making some noise about bringing the Nordiques back, which I'm not saying won't happen, but to me, that conversation starting in Quebec versus in the NHL's head office, if you know what I'm saying. Like, mm-hmm. You know, they've got a beautiful arena there. I've been to Quebec City. I was there at the World Championships back in 2008 for a hockey event, and it was the old Pepsi Colisée at the time, but like, it was awesome. So I'm certainly on board with Quebec getting a team. Like, that would be, I think it would be great, but I just don't get the feeling that's imminent or close or anything like that.
Okay. Well, you kind of touched into one other question that was asked by Max Ellis 26 on Twitter. What are the chances of Quebec City getting the Nordiques back, either via relocation or expansion, in the next 10 years? You kind of touched off on that.
10 years. Like, if we're taking a 10-year time frame, I think that's possible.
Yeah.
If we're taking a 2-year time frame, I don't think it's likely. You know, I know we spoke a little bit about Arizona in the last pod, Julien, but, you know, if Arizona stays in Arizona, which is still a question, but like, I do believe that they have a pretty solid sounding plan to try to do that. And then certainly that's their at like 100% intention as an organization. You know, I'm not sure who we're putting on the list of teams that would be relocated. And, you know, we've just added the 32nd team. Even that process took what, 4 or 5 years. You know, I can't see the league going to 33 and 34 too quickly, or 36 or whatever it might be, you know, maybe eventually. So, you know, unfortunately, cause I know there's people that want to see it and they do have a great venue. I timing is everything with this kind of decision. And I don't think the timing's coming together to see that happen anytime, you know, in the immediate future.
Next question from Junior Smith 101 on Twitter. Ask CJ, do the Flames have a shot to make it all the way?
I think they do. You know, when you look at how teams win in the playoffs, you know, they win the way the Flames have won. They have 7 shutouts already this season.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and what is Darryl Sutter known for? How did his Kings play? You know, I don't think it's all a coincidence, you know, and as much as Sutter, let's face it, that is like his old school coach as you can get. I mean, his media clips are hilarious. I feel a little bit sometimes for our colleagues there, because it's, you know, it'd be hard to cover him every day and learn about the team because he's just so close with information. But, you know, for all that, I mean, he clearly has found something that works in terms of getting buy-in from players, getting teams to play a certain way. I mean, I don't know how much has been noticed like nationally, but Johnny Gaudreau is having a monster season. And, you know, this is contract year, Johnny Gaudreau, and it's at both ends of the ice. I mean, he's scoring over a point a game, but, you know, his line right now, I believe, has no goals against at 5-on-5 while they're out there. And so that's what you want. When you hire Darryl Sutter, that's the effect you're looking to have, right? You're looking to get your top offensive players, you know, playing in a certain way that gives the team better areas of success, you know, in all three zones. And, you know, I think that's happening in Calgary. You know, I expect them to be good last year and got burned by that on the pick side of things. I sort of just feel like this is a delayed response. I mean, Markstrom's been awesome. Like he's, you know, it's his second season with the team. You know, Tanev's there contributing. You know, Oliver Shillington's taken a huge step for them on the blue line. And they've always had, you know, a pretty darn good group of forwards. I mean, especially Andrew Mangiapane. Like he's gone from like Olympic long shot to like, okay, this guy's just kind of in the conversation, to every week that he's not having some crazy fall off in his game. Like, this might actually happen. Like, he might play for Team Canada in Beijing. And so you added that to, you know, Gaudreau and Tkachuk. You know, Elias Lindholm doesn't get a lot of attention, but just consistently scores goals. And so, you know, I think they've got a nice mix, and, you know, they got to go through Edmonton to do it. But yeah, I don't see any reason they can't go all the way. And, you know, they were in on Jack Eichel in terms of trade talk. So I think Brad Treliving will be reasonably aggressive, you know, leading up to March 21st, if his team gives him a reason to take that swing.
What's Andrew Mangiapane's contract situation right now? Because I imagine whatever it is, whenever his next contract will be coming up, and you can pardon the pun here, but I imagine he'll be stacking up a lot more pane when it comes time for him to resign.
Yeah, I got you, bro. Yeah, he's a restricted free agent. So, I mean, he's in a great spot personally because he's, you know, having this monster season. You know, he's built on previous years. Like, what's interesting is, a lot of players, I believe he's 25 or 24. I think he's 25. Like, a lot of players don't consistently grow to 25. You know, we all have this idea, but let's face it, the numbers bear it out. Like, sometimes, you know, players, especially forwards, peak at like 23 in terms of production, but he's found a way to become more and more useful and productive and drive better results right up to 25. And now he's, you know, due for a contract. I mean, that's awesome for him. I think that's why the Flames should be aggressive too, because, you know, Johnny Gaudreau himself is an unrestricted free agent. I mean, they just have such big decisions. You know, Matthew Tkachuk, he's a restricted free agent that needs a contract, you know, so one way or another, they're making commitments to some or all of those players. They're going to be big ones. And, you know, you have this 1 year window where they're all going to be together. Like, it seems to me, it might be hard to keep that all together. I'm not going to say it can't be done. But, you know, they're just a team that's about to have some major, you know, sometimes teams get locked in. It's like, all right, it's 3 years of this kind of group. Well, they're on the last year of whatever that run has been. And so, you know, it's going to be great for Mangiapane to get paid, but, you know, it's also, I think, great opportunity for Calgary to kind of prioritize the season among more than the ones to come, because there's as many guarantees in the future for them as some teams.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Next question from Mr. A. Foster. And I noticed a few, obviously being in the market that you're in, you're going to get a lot of Leafs questions coming in. But I noticed a few of them asked about one particular player on the Leafs roster. I'll read the question from Mr. Foster here. What are the Toronto Maple Leafs plans for Kyle Clifford?
Well, he was basically traded for nothing. Future considerations is the polite way of saying we'll take that player off your hands, and immediately signed to the Toronto Marlies. And so, you know, the issue with Kyle Clifford is he had COVID early in the season. I believe he was scratched. In addition to that, he really hasn't played many games for the Blues this year. And, you know, the benefit to the Leafs is he had passed through waivers before the trade happened. And so they're able to put him in the American Hockey League. He makes $1 million, which doesn't count at all against their cap while he's in the minors. And it's just insurance. You know, it's a veteran they know. You know, he was with the team in 2020, just before the pandemic hit, and was with them in the bubble briefly for their 5-game series against Columbus after the pandemic, or not that it, not post pandemic, but once hockey started playing during the pandemic again.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of awkward times explaining all that. But the point is like they know him, they trust him, they like him, but I don't see a burning need right now to get him in the NHL lineup. I think the initial goal is get him up to speed, get him playing games in American Hockey League. If injuries come along, he'll get called up. Certainly if it gets closer to the playoffs, he's someone that will be eligible to play for the team. And so he's going to play NHL games this year. I just don't see a rush to do it right now while the Leafs are winning a lot and reasonably healthy.
From the Drew M on Twitter, do the Leafs actually trade a defenseman before Christmas?
It's seeming less likely. You know, some of the need for that trade went away, or the potential need, when Peter Mrazek got injured, of all things. And you'll say, how's that connected? Well, when Peter Mrazek got injured, they were able to put him on long-term injured reserve. And so that opened up a lot more cap space for Toronto. You know, not that it was going to be a cap specific move, but it was going to be driven in part to get them a little bit more flexibility because of their tight cap situation. Well, you know, the urgency for that isn't there when the cap is no longer an issue. And again, as we're recording this, they've won 11 of 13 games. And so, you know, they've basically gone with a rotation of players being out. It's been Travis Dermott, Timothy Liljegren, Rasmus Sandin sat a game. Obviously Justin Hall had a 5 or 6 game stretch where he was a healthy scratch. And so they're basically working as a trusted group of seven with, you know, only 6 of them play on any given night. And so as long as the cap situation doesn't force it, I actually think some of the momentum on that has died down, you know, but teams were made aware that they could have Dermott or Hall. And so that's where the talk started a few weeks ago. It just didn't produce a trade. And now, you know, it's pro sports, man. You make a plan and then something new comes along and you got a new plan. And so, you know, I would think it's less likely at this stage what we'll see that trade happen anytime soon.
You got a question from one of your colleagues on Twitter, Sarah Orleski, who covers the Winnipeg Jets for TSN. Yeah. When the Packers and Cowboys are playing at the same time, which game gets top billing at home? I understood you were always a Cowboys fan. I'm guessing your wife is a Packers fan?
That's true. And Sarah is also a Packers fan. Mm. And so that's one of those questions, like the lawyers say, like, don't ask a question you don't know the answer to. Mm. Because Sarah just wants me to say out loud that the Packers game would get prime billing in the case that there was a conflict. And we're a one TV household too. So like, this is a legit thing. It's funny because the Packers and Cowboys played a playoff game years ago. And
yes.
But like, there was no world where we would watch that in the same house, like a game that matters like that. Just because, like, you know, I don't know, because I love the Cowboys.
And, I mean, yeah, but like, well, I mean, it could be fun, you know, you and your wife, you're just, you know, going at it, like, or I guess maybe you get, how intense do you guys get during Packers Cowboys games? Now I really want to know that.
Like, well, there haven't been that many big ones in our time as a couple, but that, there was one in particular. It was a stupid Dez Bryant game where he made a catch and they ruled it not a catch. And it was it was total bullshit. Like, the Cowboys got jobbed, of course. So like, thankfully I wasn't home for that one. I was actually on the road just doing a work road trip. So it made it easy. There was no decisions that needed to be made. I was in another city, so I watched it safely from there and invented my frustration. I'm sure my wife was watching at home and was happy with the outcome, happier than I was. But yeah, the Packers, I'll call it as it is, the Packers get number one billing if there's ever a conflict.
But like, mobile devices, DAZN, TSN Red Zone. You can get Red Zone on TSN.ca now. Like,
yeah.
But, like iPad, phone. Like, all right, fine. You want the TV? Fine.
We live in a small condo, man. Like, I'm not doing these hits from my kitchen because I think my kitchen's the best decor. It's, you know, it's a condo. There's only so many places to go, and so if you have two people rooting for the opposite event in that small space, I think it's best just to get some distance. Just keep it healthy, you know.
Okay. All right. Fine. All right. It seems as if you know what, I got what I needed from that one. next question from London Dude on Discord. That's right. You could ask us questions through our Discord. If you go on the SDPN website, you'll be able to find the link towards the Discord. Should be, what, like over 8,300 people on the Discord. There will be days where you might have people on the thousands who are just live online on all the different sub-channels. And it's crazy, by the way. Like, there's stuff where you can hang out and just talk about the CJ show, talk about the Steve Dangle podcast, talk about Agent Provocateur, talk about
pickles.
Talk about pickles. Talk
there seems
about
to be a lot of pickle
crabs.
Talk whenever I jump in there.
Yeah, you're the pickle man.
Pickle makes a sandwich better.
Yes, it does. Burgers.
That's a hill I'll die on, Discord.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, and burgers too. Yeah.
Well, oh, sure. Me. Yeah. Well, burgers, that's all right.
That's exactly what I was about to say. From London Dude on Discord, hey CJ, you frequently hit at your morning job on the on your morning jog on the show, and you helped inspire me to start my own run streak, hitting 50 days. I don't remember exactly when this person wrote this, so he may have already hit 50 days.
Sorry, what's this person's name?
London Dude.
That's what their name is
on Discord.
That's awesome, London Dude.
Yeah, man. How have your runs been lately, and what kind of mileage are you doing a week?
So I am at 572 days is my run streak.
That's impressive.
Back to April 29th, 2020. I do basically 10K a day average. And, you know, there's an odd day I'm a little less. There's actually lately I've done a few longer runs. Just, I don't know, one day I couldn't sleep, so I just went for a long run. And it's been great. Honestly, this is the hard time of year for me with the running, just because it's getting cold. Like we're in the middle, this will sound weird. Once we're in the middle winter, I'm totally fine with it. It's just like, I'm steeled up for it. I'm just used to it. But when you're starting to get cold and you're used to just wearing shorts and, you know, I just went and bought a running jacket, that helps with the motivation a little bit, you know, get some new threads out there. But, yeah, it's been going great. And honestly, I don't intend, knock wood, to stop anytime soon. I didn't know if, you know, I did it a year and finished my year with a marathon and that I raised some money for Conquer COVID charity last April. I didn't know how, I knew I was going to do the next day, but I didn't know how long I'd keep going. But now I'm not that far off 2 years, like relatively speaking, 2 years is coming into the picture. Like I've started to like bat around ideas sometimes on those runs. Like, what will I do to mark 2 years? Don't let me do anything too crazy because it's going to be during the playoffs this year, April 29th. But I'll probably do something crazy. I like pushing myself. And honestly, it still does wonders for my mental health and, or just for my like way of being. Like I just find it's a good productive way to burn off stress or anything I'm worrying about. You know, I think what you're finding, London Dude, probably if you've done 50 days, like I remember 50 days feeling like a big deal. Like the first 50 is harder than the next 450, I think. Like once you get it, I don't know what someone out there might have an answer on this. Like, I don't know when a real habit starts, but like really it's a habit now. Like it's like brushing my teeth. I don't even think about it. Like I almost don't remember my run this morning. I know I ran this morning, but like I just wake up and do it most days. I mean, scheduling doesn't always allow it, but for the most part, I like getting it done in the morning. And so, yeah, it's been really good.
That's really cool that you're able to just kind of set to that and just basically have it as your daily routine to just run like almost 600 days. Like that's really impressive.
And I recognize too, it's not for everyone. Like some people actually get a lot more sore or, you know, repetitive stress injuries. Like I'm not out here saying everyone should run every day. Like that's not, I'm really only sharing this or I decided to share it when I went public a year ago talking about it was more just because I want someone out there like London Dude to hear it and do it and maybe get the same benefit. Like my point is this isn't a catch-all solution for everyone. It's what I find works for me. And it really, in the early part of the pandemic, like, you know, I've told this story other places, but it really helped pull me from a difficult spot where I just was like, all I was just a bundle of worry. And, you know, at that point in time, nothing was open. There's nowhere you could go. Like, it was just like one thing I could focus on each day to help myself to sort of like release the stress and energy. And, you know, it's really, I think it's pushed a lot of good change in my life too. And so, you know, the physical benefits are like what maybe people notice, but I'm telling you the mental benefits or just the emotional benefits, whatever you want to call that, are for me the best part about it. And I fix a lot of my day sometimes at like 6 a.m., like just out there for a run. Like sometimes I just like get, I just sort out everything I got to work through, and then everything is just more calm and orderly after getting that done.
Man, that just makes me feel really happy just hearing that it's done wonders for yourself. Like just friend, like that really means a lot to hear that you're in a better space because of what you've been able to do. That's awesome.
Do you know what it teaches you about? It teaches you about the nature of an excuse. It teaches you about discipline. It teaches you about all the things that all the stories we tell ourselves in our head about why we can't do things. You know, for me, I could never have imagined that I would do this at the time that I started it, like not even remotely. And, you know, it's not even that time is important, because it's really not. Like when I go out there, I'm not trying to impress anyone. I ain't the fastest guy on the Toronto Waterfront Trail by any stretch. But when I did my COVID marathon, I ran it 15 minutes faster than my previous best marathon, which I hadn't run in 12 years. And I just thought, you know, in 12 years, naturally you're going to get slower. You're getting older. You're less strong, essentially, for lack of a better way to put it. And it was just cool for me at age 39, I ran a faster marathon than when I was in pretty good shape at age 27 doing it. And in the middle, I got out of that good shape, and just to get back to that place was really satisfying. And, you know, it continues to be, again, it's just, you can all do so much more than we realize. You just got to start somewhere. And I know it's hard, because I've been in the hard spot where it feels like you can't do anything. Like, you know, without sharing any, you know, I've talked to a few people recently that are in a tough spot, and like, you just feel for someone, because I can understand it. Like sometimes you don't know where to start, right? You just feel like everything in your life, you don't even know where to take the first step, let alone the next 550 days worth of steps. But, you know, for me, it helped just to focus on doing that one thing. Like that was my mindset. I was like, if I do nothing else the rest of the day, but I did that run, at least I did that run. And then of course, you know, there are not that many days I did nothing else the rest of the day. But, you know, having that as a core kind of part of my day is really, you know, it's changed my life, honestly. I don't think it's actually stretched to say that. And so that's why I'm never going to let it go easily. Obviously, I could become injured, or, you know, if I don't know if I'm going to the Olympics yet, but if I went to Beijing, you know, it's my understanding, I think you just stay in your room. So I don't know, if maybe my run streak will end because of some circumstances like that at some point, but I'm not going to willingly just one day wake up and be like, you know what? I don't feel like it's Tuesday. It's a little bit cold out there. I mean, you know, my mind's stronger than that right now.
Well said, CJ. Let's get to the next question.
That was more on the running than we meant.
That's fair. Dude, this is the Chris Johnston show. Like, well, we can talk, you know, about virtually anything we really want to. Well, I mean, you can. I mean, I'll go with whatever you want me to talk to. I don't care. But for this next one, from Souls, thoughts on Patrick Elias making the Hockey Hall of Fame? Why was Marian Hossa a lock? And also missing from this particular question, on Discord, this person basically put up a graphic putting Hossa and Elias's stats side by side, and essentially trying to make the point that they're pretty comparable.
I haven't studied it. That's the hard part, to give you a good answer. Like when I hear, I mean, look, part of a Hall of Famer is almost just the initial part of it, is like deeply comparing them, what their production was, what awards they won, all that sort of stuff. And then the other part is just like, does that person, when you hear their name, sound like a Hall of Famer? And with Elias, it does. Like the idea of that doesn't sort of offend me or make me go like, oh no, like no way. Because, you know, probably what he doesn't benefit from when we're talking about that, like the name recognition part, is just he played on those Devils teams that were by design to be a little bit, I was going to say soulless, but that's not fair, but just sort of, you know, they ground teams into dust. Right. But he was an important part of that. And they won a lot of games and they won cups. And so, you know, I'd have to look closer at what his career numbers finished at, what individual awards and stuff he would have won, like some of those things that burnished the resume. But, you know, I think that there's a chance he gets in. I'd like to see Daniel Alfredson get in personally.
Yeah. Me too.
I think that Daniel Alfredson is a surefire Hall of Famer to me. I'm surprised it's taken a few years. Honestly, like I remember the first year he was eligible, I was thinking he would get in then. And, you know, again, maybe I saw like Ian Mendez, I respect Ian, but he put out this story saying like, it's because it's some Toronto bias or something. Like, I don't know if that's really at play here. Just because, frankly, the selection committee, it does shift a little bit each year, but the 18 members do come from all over the place. Like, they're not necessarily just influenced by the fact the Hall's in Toronto. But, you know, to me, Daniel Alfredson's a Hall of Famer. I like to see Alexander Mogilny as a Hall of Famer, you know, from older players that have, you know, had a number of chances at getting in. And what do we learn from this class? You had Kevin Lowe and Doug Wilson both as players go in, you know, like 20 years after they were first eligible. So, you know, I could see those guys getting in, and you know, I think Eliash has got a shot too.
Can I throw out a name, just not, wasn't even in the questions, but just a name that, you know, maybe he could be up for Hockey Hall of Fame induction when his time is called, but Patrick Marleau, I mean, he has the all-time games played record. I know he has the international accolades. I don't know if he has enough in his career to actually really be a Hockey Hall of Famer, but I could be wrong.
I think he's getting in because, and I understand the criticism here. Like, what someone will say to this inevitably is he was never the best player at any given time during his career. He was never the best center. He played a bit of center, played a bit of wing. Like, he didn't sort of like revolutionize anything. But my counter would be that compiling the stats he did is still an accomplishment. Like, I get that it's maybe not as sexy as sort of a player who comes in like Pavel Bure, who was just electric and put up like 60 goal seasons. And then unfortunately had his career ended really early by knee injuries. Like, and so you're always wondering like what his career numbers could have looked like, because he was so ridiculous when he was on, he just didn't get a chance to be his best for a long time. Well, staying healthy, I realize there's some luck in there, but you know, Patrick Marleau had to grind through a lot of Tuesdays, man, a lot of road trips to insert City X maybe you don't want to be in, or just tough times with team. Like, to play that many games is a serious accomplishment, and he was not a bad player, and he was he was actually an effective player into his late 30s. It's just at the end it fell off, as it does for most guys. So, you know, I think he's in because that's an accomplishment in itself. You know, I'm not voting. I don't think they're listening to my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong. We're not recognizing just one thing at a Hall of Fame, right? You are recognizing, okay, the best player ever is in, or the best goaltender, the best goal scorer. But, you know, the guy who played more games than everyone else was doing something right to do that too. And so I would be stunned if, I'm not saying he's first ballot and he's got to go in above this player, that player, that player. But I think we're going to see him at one of these upcoming Hall of Fame ceremonies.
In the case of Marleau, at least, like, the points total at least would help justify his induction into the Hockey Hall of Fame. If Mike Sillinger, God bless his soul, was the guy who had the most games played all time, I don't think we'd be having this discussion right now. No disrespect to him.
Right, but like, you can't have one without the other, right? If you weren't producing points at a high level for a long enough time, you don't even get a chance to, what's his final games played total? Like 1700 or something?
Yeah, I could just 1800? Pull that up while we're like thinking of it right now. Right.
But my point is like, you don't even get a chance to play that many games unless you're like really, really good for a really, really long amount of time. And so that's kind of where I stand on that. It's like that, again, that's an accomplishment. It's a skill. It's something, if it was easy to do, someone would have done it between when Gordie Howe stopped playing and when Patrick Marleau. You know, I don't know if he's officially retired. I remember I said that on a previous episode and I meant to follow up.
Yeah, that's true. We don't know if he's officially retired yet.
But, you know, he's not playing games as we're recording this now. And so, you know, there's a lot of players that came and went in the meantime and didn't get anywhere close to insert number here, Julian.
That's very fair. By the way, 1,779 games played, 566 goals, 1,197 career points for Patrick Marleau, who as of right now, not playing for an NHL team, not officially retired, but also not playing for a team at this moment in time.
Maybe he comes back before the trade deadline. Who knows?
Ooh, don't put that. Hey, we don't know. We don't know. Well, we don't know.
To be
we
fair, I'm the one who's supposed to find out and come and tell you. I just haven't done that. So let's move on and I'll get the info and I'll give a proper update rather than just speculating wildly.
Hasty Clan on Discord, any updates on any further fallout from the racism situation in Ukraine? He's making reference to the former UHL player Jalen Smerek, who was subjected to racial abuse from the player's name was Andrei Deniskin during a UHL game. And they did handed out some kind of discipline to Deniskin, but of course it was under some criticism. And I think the IIHF is supposed to be investigating all this. I don't know any other further updates on that, but I'm sure you might have some more insight.
Yeah, the IIHF is still considering this an open case. And I think that there's a good chance you'll see some sort of international punishment leveled at Deniskin that hasn't come down yet. I did notice he is back playing in the domestic league. there in Ukraine. Since this happened, he served the suspension he was given. And as for Jalen Chmerich, he's moved on. Is he Germany? Sorry, I should have looked that up, but I'm not sure. But I know he's moved on to another European league. And, you know, I think the sense I got at the time from that is he just felt there's nothing to be gained by staying in that league after everything that happened. It was a pretty emotional thing, as you can imagine. And so, you know, he's still playing over in Europe there. And yeah, that's where we're at. But hopefully there's more of a hammer coming from the IIHF, because I think we both agree that guy should not be playing. And he has played games, since this incident.
Yeah. The next question here is actually directed towards me, but you've been to Montreal enough, you can help out with this. Julian, visiting Montreal next month for a few days. We're catching the Habs, but what else should we check out? Go to Mount Royal, go to the lookout point, you know, take in the fancy mountains, I guess, and the nice scenery and the, you know, overlooking the horizon, the city and all that. I don't know. I mean, it'd be nice to know, I guess, if you have any idea where you're staying. I imagine you'll be somewhere downtown.
Centre Bell, man. Like, how are we missing the most obvious one? Like, to me.
Well, I mean, they're going to go to a game. So, of course, they're going to go to the Bell Center.
But go there and live it. And I mean, unfortunately, I can imagine the atmosphere is not what it would normally be just because of where the team's at. But that, for me, is my favorite place to go to a game when it's on. And it's usually consistently on. I just think this season's a disaster. So I can't imagine the vibes are that immaculate in there these days.
Well, here's the thing, right? Whenever the weird thing about this Canadian season, I was talking about this with Arpin Basu earlier today, actually. The Canadians, when they're bad, it's bad. Like, everyone is booing. Everybody is just exasperated. They're fed up. But the few times the Canadians have won, they've won like big games. Like, even on the weekend against the Nashville Predators, you might have just seen the scoreline. It was 5-3. The Canadians were up 5-0. And there was a whole fight at the end of the second period where it was like a near line brawl with everybody. And the fans were roaring as if we were in like ancient Rome, like watching gladiators go at it. Mathieu Perrault had a hat trick at home, like a guy from Drummondville playing for the Canadiens in his first season. That's the loudest I had heard that crowd in quite some time. Whenever the Canadiens have won this year, the few times they've won, it's been some pretty big wins and some pretty big moments have happened on the ice as well. So when that atmosphere is there, the fans are in full voice as they can be. So not to
we should be directing this question to the Nashville Predators, because they had to spend 5 days in Montreal because of the Ottawa Senators shutdown. I imagine they saw enough of the city that might have contributed to that result.
So I mentioned Mount Royal, just hanging out on 12 Crescent, Saint-Denis, Saint-Laurent as well. You want to hang out there. I don't know why I'm blanking on like so many. I mean, Schwartz's, I guess, if you like smoked meat, obviously. Like, I'm not like the big like smoked meat dude, but I'm like, all right, you can
hang the Plateau. Out there. There's some cool Plateau's bars and chill. Restaurants up there, you know?
Yeah. Plateau's chill. You know, you hang out with some hipsters over there. Back when I was in university, I hung out on the Plateau like way more. I don't hang out on the Plateau nearly as much. I'm more of like a Verdun, Saint-Henri type of guy now, a little bit like closer to home. If you're looking for an interesting pizza place, there's a spot, I think, in Point St. Charles called Fugazi. They have this really interesting pizza where you basically get like, you know, basic your cheese and pepperoni, but they get like honey on it. And it's like this Wu-Tang branded pizza. Like, they call it Wu-Tang Killer Bees. It's probably gonna be too cold for you to like take the pizza and then walk up to like the Lachine Canal and hang out, but like take a walk down to, you know, give yourself a day, go through Point St. Charles, walk through some of the neighborhoods and just see how everything has just like changed. Obviously go through Old Montreal if you're feeling, you know, fancy schmancy. Get yourself a beaver tail in Old Montreal. Also another underrated spot that
Montreal's got a romantic feel. I don't know what the status of our person is, but if you're there with a partner, it might be a nice place for a walk.
Oh yeah, for sure. Also some pretty nice like restaurants around there too. The Biodome, very underrated spot to, you know, check out there. The flora and fauna and nature stuff. It's a little out the way. It's like right next to Olympic Stadium. So if you're down to take the metro further east out of downtown, why not spend a couple hours there at the Biodome? Why not? I think
that's pretty comprehensive, bud.
I think so. Yeah.
I think you should actually volunteer to pick them up and drive them around.
Oh, man. I'll gladly
not that you need another job.
But, yeah, I don't know if I need to drive them around, but if they do want to link up, a cartoon Jimbo, I don't even know if I read out the person's Discord name, but hey, let me know when you're in the city if you'd want any more places to go. Just send me a message on Discord or something. Are you good? I mean, I went through all the questions I set up. If you want me to throw out one or two more, there's still a bunch on Twitter.
Sure. Grab a couple more. Why not?
All right. Let me grab a couple more here on Twitter. By the way, appreciative of everyone who sent tweets to CJ.
Thank you, fans.
Yes, we appreciate it.
You guys were the content drivers today. We needed you. You picked us
up. Ask CJ from Rod Blanchard. I'm 62 and played hockey when I was younger. Do you think I could eventually score a goal if I played on a line with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner almost every game?
Yes. I actually do think it. Like, they could bank one in off you, right?
Yeah.
I would be worried, not just the age thing. Like, I'd be worried for anyone who isn't capable, like, to go into an NHL game and emerge unscathed would be difficult. But it's funny, like, I used to always do these hypotheticals with my buddies. Like, I played a lot of golf as a teenager. And I remember we'd be like, I'd be golfing with my buddy, same buddy, Sean, that used to have the 5-digit number that we doxed earlier. and we'd be like, how would Tiger Woods play this hole? Like, what would it be like if Tiger Woods, like, came to our little golf course? And, you know, like, it's just fun to imagine that. But I do think you could score a goal if those players are trying to help you score, like if they were on board with it. But it would be so fast and so dangerous. Like, you probably wouldn't be able to play with them for too long. That's the hard part. You'd play like one or two games and be out for the season, unfortunately. But I like the hypothetical. I do think you could score. It would be very ugly. But you know, not all those goals are not everyone's first goal in the NHL is a masterpiece. So I think you could do it.
So if that's the case with those two players, then they're definitely getting points with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on their same line.
Well, everybody is. Like, I'm pretty sure Mark Spector got an assist from the press box the other night in Edmonton with just like anybody who's just around them is going to get points. You know, I know we've given them some love, but like, I'm blown away by this start to the year for those guys. Like, I don't see any way Edmonton isn't a cup contender. And I know there'll be some eye rolls and they haven't necessarily been all that close yet, but like, to me, these guys are just on another level. It'd be interesting to see where this talk, how it evolves and goes on looking after the stars and protecting Connor McDavid, making sure he gets the calls he earns, because that'll be a huge part of whatever happens in the playoffs for them, because their power play is just so lethal. But yeah, like, I'm not going to go so far to say I could get a point with them, but I kind of feel like I could get a cheesy second assist on that line.
Okay. I can't skate, for what it's worth. But I think if
you'd have a tough time, you and Steve Dangle.
Fine. But I think if I learned how to skate, give me like a whole year and like, you know, I learned to, you know, skate and play hockey at the same time. Like, definitely I can. If we're playing ball hockey, that's no question. I'm definitely getting points with Draisaitl and McDavid. That's no question if we're talking ball hockey.
You might be the Draisaitl of ball hockey.
You know what's crazy, man? Like, the last time I played ball hockey a couple weeks ago. My lower back was killing me the entire time. And like, we were playing 3-on-3. And I was like, I could barely move out there. Like, my best days are very much behind me when it comes to playing ball hockey. I was definitely like it was funny. I think if I like, as a, when I was like more into like the Canadians and all that, I remember growing up thinking, man, I don't like Brad Marchand. But every time I played ball hockey, I'd be like, I wish I played like Brad Marchand, because I could do the dirty stuff. I could just be like a dirty player if I really wanted to. But like, I wish I had like the scoring touch. Whenever I did score, it was like a big moment for me. But like, I kind of wish I was more like Brad Marchand when I played ball hockey.
Could you make contact against like Justin Verlander in a baseball game?
Now
I'm not talking about hitting a home run. I'm talking like, you're standing in the batter's box and he's throwing what he throws to the pros. Like, could you even hit the ball? Like, I have doubts that I could.
If I can bunt, then yes, but otherwise no.
Full swing. No, I'm not letting bunts, because anyone could bunt. Fine. Anyone.
Full swing. No way. Absolutely not. Okay. So now I got to find more of these hypotheticals. Like, can you like return like an Andy Roddick serve or whatever?
Could you catch like a Tom Brady pass from like 40 yards? Like, would it like, melt your hands or what? Those guys throw the ball harder than you think.
Anyway. I don't think it's that. Come on, 40 yards? It's like...
He would probably break your hand. Maybe not your hand.
If it was like a 15-yard like slant and he's like throwing a bullet pass, that might hurt your hand. But if it's 40 yards in the air, that's like...
Let's do it the 15-yard slant then.
Oh, my hand is getting like completely... Like my hand will be dangling. Just like, like I can't catch that. 40 yards? If I get enough speed on it, maybe.
Well, we didn't prepare for this, so I'm just literally hypotheticaling the hypotheticals here, but...
That's fair. I'll throw out one last one. I'll throw out one last one for you. From Daniel Hamby on Twitter. Hey, CJ, given that the Hockey Hall of Fame just had their induction ceremony, who do you think will be in next year's class? Love the pod. Keep up the good work.
Well, the one good thing about this double cohort of two classes coming into one, two different years of players becoming available, is we're going to have a real Canucks love-in next year. Because I think you're getting both Daniel and Henrik Sedin. I know you want to ask me that hypothetical, only one or the other. I think they're both getting in, and you're going to have Roberto Luongo all be, you know, I think at least three quarters of the male part of next year's class. And I think that'll actually be kind of neat. It was sort of, you know, Teemu Selänne and Paul Kariya just by happenstance went in the same year. I thought that was pretty cool. Now, it doesn't always work that way, but I think it's really neat that like some of the players that helped you get there. I mean, obviously those guys all come around, and like one of the neat things about the Jarome McGinley class is like, you see Mike Camilleri there on the red carpet. Dion Phaneuf was in town. Jamie McLennan, my TSN teammate, is a good friend of Jarome's. Like, you know, I think every player that does this, even, you know, the Kim St. Pierre had like 10 or 12 members of the Canadian women's national team that she played with. Like they literally, it was awesome. There's one woman on the red carpet where they all lined up and got their photo taken. Like, you know, I think there's a recognition you don't ever get to that level without a lot of people helping you. And so what will be cool is that you have those three guys that were so part of the Canucks coming within one game of winning the cup in 2011, and certainly being, for my money, the best team of like 2009 or 10 till 12, 13. You know, like there was a window there where every year they were great. They just didn't quite win a Stanley Cup. And, you know, I think they're all going to go in together. You know, Rick Nash is another interesting name, who's, you know, becoming first time eligible. You know, I'm not sure he gets in as a first ballot Hall of Famer, just because I mentioned some players earlier that, you know, I might make a case of over him, but you know, he's another one to keep an eye on for next season.
Okay. And with that, we've gone through the questions on the Fan Show edition of the Chris Johnston Show. That was very much a very fun episode to do, my man.
Yeah, it's good to branch out sometimes, you know? I mean, we love hockey. We're watching the games. We're both working. But you know, it's good to spread the wings and let the brain go other places, too.
Yeah, we also learned that you and your wife don't watch Packers and Cowboys games in the same house. That was very enlightening.
Let's hope we don't have that. You learned too much about my running. You learned all sorts of weird stuff. But you learned how phone numbers worked in Coburg circa 1988. This was a lot of real nuggets that you come to this show for were dropped today.
Oh, this is exactly why we come through with the Chris Johnston Show. Every Monday we do this, not normally as lengthy as we do, but every Monday, we take in questions for the Ask CJ segment. I should also mention, my good friend Dylan Waugh, who has his own podcast, the Habs Edition podcast, asked me if he could do the jingle for Ask CJ. Actually, you know what? Because I mentioned him, I'm going to mention the story that he told me. And if he gets mad at me for telling the story, you know what? We'll find a way to cut it off. But I still can't believe this goddamn story. It's crazy. So this dude grew up in Scarborough and he went to school, I think, around the same time as guys like Tyler Toffoli and like Wayne Simmonds were like they're Scarborough dudes. Like he went to the same school as those guys. Like he's known them, and or at least like the same school as them. I don't think he was there at the same time, but he was there around the same time as I'll get to this point in the story. So this dude is big into rock. He's big into, you know, making music and whatever. And this one guy comes up to him and he's like, "Yo, I want you to be a part of my band. Like we're doing this like trippy, like more R&B kind of stuff. Like you should be like, you know, in this, man, because I know you play guitar." And my man's like, "Nah, man, I don't do this stuff. Like, what is this R&B crap? Like, I don't do this. Like, I just do rock." That guy was The Weeknd.
I knew that was going to be the punchline.
Yep. Yep.
Wow.
I know.
It's Dylan, you missed your shot, bud. So there's no other way to put it.
My man, no. But yeah, he offered his services at
making a jingle for Ask CJ. I did not realize.
Actually, can you get Dylan to Ask the Weeknd to make us a jingle, or is that pushing it? A little pro bono here for the CJ pod, or what?
I would love if Abel Tesfaye made a song for Ask CJ if anything. And I'm sorry, Dylan, for putting you out there, bro, but that story's just too good. I'm sorry.
Do you know what's funny? Just to put a bookend on this weird episode, we're all over the place. I was walking to Scotiabank Arena on Saturday night to cover the Leafs Penguins game, and this group of five guys, they actually yelled at me. They chirped me by saying, "Hey, there's Elliot Friedman." And I waved at them like they were being fun. And then we chatted a little bit. And then the one guy's like, "Hey, do you want some edibles? I heard that episode of your show. It was hilarious." And I was like, "I'm good, bud. I learned my lesson at the Saddle Dome." So we got listeners out there.
Oh, yeah.
Even if they think I'm Friege on the street or whatnot.
You look nothing like Elliot Friedman.
I think they were just trying to get my attention. It actually got my attention. I laughed. I actually laughed when they said it. So.
Right. That's so good. Okay.
He's like, "We just took some edibles. You want some?" I'm like, "No."
I'm like, CJ.
Working, and I really don't want to, I told that story, but I don't want to repeat living that story in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, okay. We are long past the 30-minute bell. Sorry, not sorry, Adam Wild. If you want to send us questions for next Monday's episode, tweet at CJ Reporter Chris or me at JK McKenzie. Add the Ask CJ hashtag. Add the Ask CJ hashtag. Sorry, English. Also, subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe on YouTube. Check out all the other great podcasts for the SDPN. So, Agent Provocateur with Alan Walsh. New episode drops on Tuesday. I don't know who the special guest is, so I'm not going to leak anything like what I did the last time I tried to promote that show. So, keeping myself out of trouble. And the Steve Dangle podcast. I think they have the hockey guy on their episode that dropped on Monday. So there's some big things popping for Steve and the boys. All right, that's pretty much going to do it for today's episode.
A bientôt, mon ami.
All right, for CJ, I'm Julian. So long and peace.
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter, @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie, @JK McKenzie.